As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The U, the new Miami, the new Miami, the new Miami, surge, surge, the new Miami, the new Miami, the new Miami, surge, surge.
It's a cane thing when we walk through, with the U ain't no bark, dude. Straight dog when we bring the fight, ain't scared of no bright lights, it's prime time when we play as
Welcome back to the Wide Right Podcast. I'm Manny Navarro, your Miami Hurricanes beat writer for The Athletic. Today we got a special show. We're going to bring on a guest that I'm sure most of you are familiar with if you watch ESPN's College Game Day, or you love gambling, or you love stats like I do. You've heard of Chris Felica, the Bear. We're going to bring him on in a few minutes here. But first off, it's Miami-Clemson week. Canes are going on the road facing the number one ranked Tigers, 14.5-point underdog. Most people are expecting Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne and company to have a good day against Miami, even with the Canes being ranked number 7 and 3-0 right now. Mike Zimmerman, my producer, I got to ask you first off, what's your feeling going into this game? We got to make predictions. Let's make them right now. Who are you taking?
All right. So before I give the official pick, I think that regardless of the outcome, and we kind of touched on this with Chris, which, you know, all you guys will hear in just a second. Regardless of the outcome, I think Miami can't let this game dictate the rest of the season, whether they win or lose. Now, with that being said, I don't think Miami is quite at that level yet. I think this is a good measuring stick. If they can stay competitive going into the fourth quarter and make it a real competitive game, showing that there has been improvement, what we've seen the first three games isn't necessarily a fluke. I would be satisfied and happy and have some positive thoughts and really believe that Manny Diaz has this thing going in the right direction. But with that being said, I don't think they have enough. I'll go Clemson 31, Miami 21.
All right, that's a good score. I have Clemson winning 38-21. I know our boy Kelvin Harris is going to disagree with both of us, and it says Miami. He's called me several times since our last podcast last week to tell me he thinks Miami can blow out Clemson. So if they do, he may be the only person in America who thinks that, because I don't know how many other analysts have come out and said that exactly. But he wants everybody to know he thinks Miami can blow out the Tigers. I, on the other hand, think it's going to be a close game, and I think ultimately defense is where Miami's going to have some struggles here, especially the linebacker position and some other spots. Punt returner remains an issue. We mentioned that on the show last week. Mark Pope has fumbled twice, and today Manny Diaz, the head football coach of the Hurricanes, said that it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a position battle the rest of this week. He said they still have faith in Mark Pope, but I think it's a position where you could see a freshman like Xavier Restrepo come in if he shows them this week that he can handle punts. Ultimately, you can't have any mistakes against this Clemson team, because odds are you give them great field position, they're going to find the end zone. That's what Trevor Lawrence does. Other notes from today's press conferences as we record this Tuesday afternoon around 4:15. It seems like the entire roster is going to be healthy. We haven't been told of any COVID issues or any players held out because of injuries. I know guys have been dealing with bumps and bruises. But the good news is it seems like Miami's going into this game healthy. Other than safety Gervin Hall, who has been a starter in the past, he's going to miss the first half of that game, obviously with the targeting penalty that he got at the end of the Florida State game. But other than that, I think all of the key rotation players should be available. Again, there will be more COVID testing as the week progresses. Miami's testing three times a week. And so as they get closer to game time, you cross your fingers and hopes that they get past that and that you don't end up happening, you know, with what's happened in other spots here in college football where you have a couple players who test positive or, through contact tracing end up having to be pulled. So if Miami's at full strength and you've got Derek King out there, I think they're good enough certainly to give Clemson a game. I just still think the Tigers are better. Well, that's enough of my thoughts. That's enough of Mike Zimmerman's thoughts. We're going to bring on our special guest here, Chris Felica, the Bear, on College Game Day. Chris, how you doing?
What's going on? How are you? Happy to be on with you and talk some Canes.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you coming on and talking to us. So first of all, I want to get into you being a student at Miami and how that experience was like. I know you're a Long Island guy, grew up a Jets fan and a Penn State football fan, according to what I'm reading here on Wikipedia, which you know is always the most accurate source. But I'm wondering how it was that you came to be a Miami Hurricane and what that experience was like.
Well, I mean, I always knew. I mean, I was the kid growing up keeping score of a July Yankees-Angels game as an eight-year-old who would just sit in front of the TV with the box score and keeping stats. I mean, I always knew I wanted a career in sports, and I knew I wasn't going to be a Division I athlete. So I in high school, I was just looking for the best opportunity to be involved in an athletic program in a big city with sports teams around that I could really make some connections and get a lot of experience. And that's ultimately what brought me to Miami. I was actually very fortunate because I knew prior to even my senior year that I was going to work. I got early admissions and I knew I was going to be working in the sports information department. It's actually a funny story where I sent down some audio tapes of me and some videotapes of a high school TV show that I did and a whole bunch of statistical work that I did, and I had sent it to Rich Dalrymple at the time, who was the SID there, and Kenny Lee and Tom Piero and John Hahn, and they were all in the sports information department at that time. And I guess as the story comes, I come down the road later when I get there, after they get to know me and really befriend me and appreciate everything I do, they tell me the story about when my package arrived and how they saw it and were like, oh yeah, we can't wait for this guy. He's one of us. We can't wait to get our hands on him. So they had a good laugh at all the information that I had sent them and hoping to get a job in the SID when I was a student there. But it was great. I worked in the athletic department there for my tenure there and met a bunch of people and made some friends for life and had some great experiences. And I certainly wouldn't be where I am today without that place.
So, I didn't go to the University of Miami. I went to Florida International University, but I very much like you, I grew up loving sports and wanting to get into the field somehow. And so I know I have a lot of guys who listen and constantly ask me, hey, how did you get into sports writing, all that kind of stuff. And how did, you know, and for you, your career's really taken off where you've been a part of something so special. I guess, what advice would you give guys like us that wanted to get into the business and somehow were lucky enough to do it?
I would say connections, networking, opportunities, just get yourself out there, especially in today. I mean, when we were breaking into the industry, there weren't podcasts left and right. There weren't online publications for people to notice you. We really had to just almost in a sense kind of luck out a little bit and just have everything line up. But I would just say get yourself out there, write podcast, connect with people, be seen, and that's really how your breaks are made. I mean, that's how my break was made. And I just wound up randomly doing statistics one night for a Knicks Heat game, and it wound up I asked Mike Breen, who was the play-by-play guy for the Knicks at the time, hey, and he was still at WFAN working on the IMA show in the morning, hey, when you I'm coming back for the summer. Any shot on an internship? And he's like, absolutely. Get back in touch with me when I get back from the road. We'll totally take care of you. And they did. My boss from WFAN wound up moving up to ESPN Radio. Found out I was looking for a job after graduation, but brought me up for an interview, and the rest is history. So it's really just making connections, meeting people, staying in touch, and it sounds like a lot of guys coach speak, I would say, but it really is true.
Yeah, it takes a lot of work, and people don't realize, like, you know, you don't just go right to the microphone and get an opportunity. You have to work towards that behind the scenes, and so. When did you first kind of get your first big break as far as, hey, do you remember that first time that they put you on TV, what that experience was like?
Yeah, it was the year Game Day expanded to 3 hours, which I think was 2013, okay. If I remember correctly. Kirk Herbstreit and Lee Fitting and Chris Fowler had been kind of like trying to push me for a while to kind of do some things on air because they knew my knowledge and they knew that I had a background with some betting stuff. So I could interject some historical notes, I had some subtle gambling advice at the time. And I was always hesitant because I didn't want to see as that loud New Yorker flailing those hands all over the place and it just kind of be a punchline. And they were like, finally, when we got to 3 hours, they were like, you've got no choice. We're doing it. We're going to figure out a way to do it. And we're not going to put you in a bad spot. You've got too much to offer. And at that time, they would just kind of come to me every now and then for just a little verbal pop or a verbal little mention, a note or a trend or a line or something along those lines. And then I guess in maybe 2015, I think was the first time that they probably, it might've been 14, it could have been, but definitely 15 is when we started doing the board with the magnets and picking three games a week. So it's really been kind of unbelievable how it's just kind of blown up into not only just the show, the podcast, the column, now with Daily Wager and SportsCenter. It's crazy just to kind of be noticed in places by people that you normally wouldn't. So it really is kind of a like pinch me type moment. So, like if you would have told like 16-year-old Chris Felica that 30 years from now, you're going to be like working the Final Four with Dick Vitale and going to the Masters and working that and sitting on the College Game Day set with those guys, it really would have been like, yeah, well, okay, yeah, sure. You're kidding, right?
Well, it's been a dream come true, and I've enjoyed watching you. I'm a stats guy myself. I love to dig into the numbers and do all that kind of research, and so much of my podcast is built on that, and a lot of what I write about here for The Athletic. I mean, it's diving into the numbers, analysis, that kind of stuff, and you've always been so insightful. I feel like you're ahead of your time because I know analysis, you know, it's kind of become a much bigger deal in sports than maybe it was even 5-10 years ago. And you were one of the first guys who was on TV talking about these numbers in such a way that I think that people have really come to appreciate what you bring to the show every single week.
It's interesting because I'm glad you said that because I can remember myself and Brad Edwards, who works at ESPN as well and hosts ESPN College Game Day radio show, and you see him on SportsCenter with all of his number crunches. Like, we lived together for quite some time, and we came up at the same time at ESPN as researchers. And I can remember he and I, like, either by hand or by media guy, like, there were times where we would have media guides spread out through our home, just kind of, like, looking for, like, basically – largest top losses by a top 10 team off of like that 66-3 Texas UCLA game, and could a team come back? Like, we would spend like hours at a time at home doing that, like manually by hand, and coming up with notes like that. And now with all these databases and computer programs and everything so readily accessible, it's a heck of a lot easier now to find some things than it was say 20-25 years ago.
I was going to ask you, just on a typical day, how much time do you spend breaking down numbers, crunching them? I mean, is this like a morning to night type of deal for you besides what you do with the podcast and the College Game Day?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm usually I work from home on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday before traveling to the Game Day site on Thursday. And it really is. I mean, I'll spend quite a bit of time on the computer, and it's obviously now not only the statistical stuff in terms of the game matchup and like statistical metrics like that, but all of the historical odds and gambling type information as well that I got to get ready for with the column and the pod and daily wager as well. So it's really kind of like twice the I try to incorporate it into one to try and make it one easier type session. But I usually do wind up taking a couple of days to figure everything out.
Is there one thing that you look for that you think, I don't know, historically has proven, you know, certain stats in certain sports that stand out more than others to you that are more proof of whether or not a team is good or bad?
I think the turnovers are always cyclical, and people like to point to turnovers, but I think that is something certainly that has come out there. I think how you fare on the road is a massive thing. It sounds simple, and it sounds like over, but like winning on the road is hard. If you can win on the road, obviously that's a big deal. And then the other thing is just success in close games. I just decided an example from last week. I mean, we've seen Iowa State really struggle in close games the last few years under Matt Campbell. Like last year, they were three wins away from potentially being a 10-win team, but their record in close games was terrible. And then you see them last week finally break through, win that close game, and now they potentially could be holding the Big 12 championship appearance on their racket. So I think defense, being able to win on the road, and finding a way to win some of these close games are three things that have stood out to me in terms of just kind of simple things. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot more analytical things in terms of like touchdown percentage and red zone touchdown percentage and things like that. But those are three things that I think everyday fans can kind of wrap their fingers around and understand.
And that's really that's the tough part of this, because some of this analytical stuff, people will just, you throw too many numbers at them and they're just like confused. They give you that confused look. And why are you, you know, speak to me in English type of thing. And yet it's so important, because it really, this is a science that you study. I mean, this is something that, like you said, can help you really get a grip on whether or not somebody's good or bad. And I think that's the tough part, is communicating it in a way where people really understand where you're coming from. And you're not just throwing a bunch of numbers and stats at them.
And it's interesting, because like people always like to make fun of that game control metric that our stats information group put together a few years back and just kind of laughed it and mocked it. But that really is a very good metric. And all people, well, what does it mean? I just tell people it's basically how you have controlled and dominated the game. It just goes to show you like how you can say, for example, there was a Florida State NC State game, I think it was, or a Florida State Maryland game in 2013. 2014, the year they wound up winning the title. And I think it was probably NC State, because I think at that time they were still in the ACC. But they got up like 35-0 at the end of the first quarter, and their win probability was basically maxed. It was 99.9%. And then they just kind of cruised out from there. And the final score, I think, maybe was 42-14 or something like that. But at the same time, they could have a game that might end 35-7 or 35-10 that the people, they won by more, allowed fewer points, but maybe the game was 14-10 going to the fourth quarter, and you scored 21 points in the fourth quarter to make the final score look a heck of a lot more dominant than it really was. But I think once people understand some of these numbers and really what they mean and can grasp the definition of it, they're really, really valuable tools.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. But that's the challenge that we have, right? As journalists, that's what we got to do. We got to take the information and get people to see what it is and find it interesting, and not just say, hey, that's too much for me, which sometimes people just do that anyway. But
looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Listen, I've really enjoyed everything you've done on ESPN, and I just got to tell you, I'm a fan. This week, of course, you get Miami-Clemson, which, being a former Hurricane, seeing this program struggle the way it has over the past two decades and kind of get to that point a few years ago where they were 10-0 and number two in the country, and everybody's, they're back. You know, it's frustrating, right? You're just like, hey, they're not back. We know they're not back yet. There's still ways to go. When you look at this Miami team, though, you've had a chance now to see them, at Louisville and then at Florida State when game day was there for both of those games. What is your impression of this group with what Manny Diaz has and De'Aaron King and Rhett Lashley? My opinion, personally, I feel like this is a legitimate top 10 team in terms of what they bring offensively. You look at all the pieces and you say, okay, there's a transfer here at right tackle. There's a transfer kicker. There's a transfer quarterback. And I tend to say Miami won't be back until they're recruiting on that elite level. But right now, this team, what do you think of this group for this year?
Well, I think you're right about that, in the sense that the depth right now is the biggest thing that Miami is having to struggle with. And that's why you've seen Manny bring in so many transfers over the last a couple of years, because they need players to be able to play and compete right now to sell that vision of the future as to what Miami can once again hopefully be. And I think that's really worked for them this year. It's amazing that that Miami fan, yeah, sure, De'Aaron King is there, and we have a quarterback who can make the offense go. But Miami fans are like more excited about maybe having Jose Bargalis, the kicker. We finally have a kicker who can make a field goal, and we have a quarterback, and we have an offensive coordinator who's calling up tempo plays and an offense capable of scoring. But I think all of that together. I mean, if you look at Miami's record in the last couple of years, like, I don't want to say they wasted national championship caliber type defenses, but they've had some really, really elite defenses in terms of defensive efficiency and things like that over the last couple of years. But they just haven't had an offense that could go out and do anything about it. Like they were scoring 17 points a game or allowing 17 points a game and losing. Now right. You've got an offense that's capable of doing things. Like, they had the stretch against Louisville and Florida State where they had scored on 11 straight possessions. I mean, that was incredible. I mean, putting up 40 points and 450 yards in consecutive games. Like I said, I know it's UAB and it's a bad Florida State team and it's a bad Louisville defense, but what they've done is really impressive. And on the other side of the ball, I think defensively, it's really interesting that their defensive line has been able to get as much disruption as it has without Gregory Rousseau. Like, mm-hmm. I think when he opted out, I think there were a lot of people, oh, no, here we go again, we lose the best defensive lineman. But the way Phillips has emerged, I guess Jade Silvera is finally playing to what his headlines out of high school were, or being a number one recruit. And on the other side, Quincy Roche coming in, another transfer to give them immediate help. They are getting pressure on the quarterback, and I don't want to say they're going to go to Clemson and win this week, because it's certainly the team that everybody is shooting to be nationally right now. But they're going up there. I think there's a feeling nationally, just like, maybe this is not like a year where Clemson is going to rip through the ACC and maybe win the ACC championship game by like 35 points like they have in recent years, because of what Miami has shown now with the quarterback and an ability to move the ball, because of a team like North Carolina who nearly beat them last year. Mm-hmm. And has so many people back, because of a team like Virginia Tech, who is getting off to a great start. Like, there are contenders, because a team like Notre Dame, who is getting all their weapons back, a wide receiver, has a good defense. I think people genuinely view potentially four teams that could reach the SEC title game that could potentially give Clemson a run for its money for the first time in a bunch of years.
Yeah, it's certainly refreshing because we've seen what's happened to the Coastal, where you have that sort of rotating team here the last 7-8 years mm-hmm. of who's going to win the division. When Virginia Tech came in and was pretty much dominating it for a while, it's become this, okay, who's going to emerge and get killed by Clemson, right? I mean, that's been the story. And
exactly.
I think this year you finally feel like, okay, Miami's got an offense. They've got Derek King. Maybe they push Clemson. Maybe they finally, you know, pull off an upset here. Maybe it's Notre Dame, as you said, or Virginia Tech, even with what they've done early on. I think it's certainly good for the ACC and certainly good for college football when you finally have some challengers sort of emerge. But with this Miami team, one of my concerns is linebacker. They kind of had Shaq Quarterman and Michael Pinckney there for a while as four-year starters. And I look at that and I look at some of the breakdowns that they've had kind of with the run defense at times with some of these other guys. When you look at Travis Etienne and what Trevor Lawrence can do when they get out of the, you know, when Trevor decides to tuck it and run, I see some issues for Miami going into this game, especially with the way, you know, Bradley Jennings is their starting middle linebacker. He's coming back from injuries, trying to recover from that. He's only had one tackle in each of his last two games, and he's been in the wrong place a few times. The way Clemson runs the football, is that ultimately, you think, the biggest challenge, or is it just if they've got the complete offense and Miami's going to have its hands full?
I think Miami's going to have its hands full, but at the same time, I'm really curious to see how Miami matches up with Clemson, because this is, a much different Clemson offense than the last time these teams met in that ACC championship game, where Hunter Renfrow, he has been such a valuable part of the Clemson offense. And even last year, as great as that offense was, it felt to me like they were missing him in that slot position. Mm-hmm. And now their offense seems to be a lot of let your five-star wide receivers run downfield, let Trevor Lawrence throw it down, and just as long as he can, it's big play, big play, big play, big play. Whereas they were really content on working your way down the field, finding a nice bubble, a nice spot for Renfrow to sit and get that 12-yard gain, or third and six, run a 7-yard pattern, get the first down. Like I think they were missing him a lot of times last year. And I'm also curious how the weather is going to impact this game on Saturday night. I think it's going to rain. And like, who does rain favor? Usually you talk about rain being a great equalizer and that the less talented team, it might help them. Like, does that help Miami? Because maybe some of the Clemson passing game could be disrupted by that. Or does that help Clemson because they are just, in fact, the more talented team? And it might help Travis Etienne. He knows where he's going, and the Miami defense right. doesn't. So I mean, I'm curious to see that if it is bad weather, like I think, because potentially in the forecast for right now, what does that do to the game? Because I also just talking about Miami in general, like having those three backs to be able to rotate in and out is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And it just keeps three fresh running backs who are fresh and quick in there at all times. And that's a game changer as well. That's one position I think where Miami does have some depth, and also helps keep Clemson a little bit off the field. Maybe you play a little bit of complementary football this year to not allow Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne to have the ball for as long of a period of time as you might with as many plays as the Hurricanes have run in the first few games.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously Miami's whole MO this year has been line up, get to the line of scrimmage quickly, and snap the ball quickly. Against Louisville, they just hit the big play, which is why they didn't run so many plays. But I thought this last game against Florida State, I think they had a 14-play scoring drive, an 18-play scoring drive, where, as Manny Diaz likes to describe it, it's sort of like a boxing approach. We're going to hit you with a bunch of jabs and low body blows, and then we're going to give you the uppercut at the end. I don't know that they could do that against Clemson. They may just have to get the points any way they can get them to kind of keep up with Trevor Lawrence. But it is an interesting approach, and the rain certainly is going to be an interesting factor. I think this Miami offensive line is a lot better, but yet there's been moments this year where, okay, the running game isn't really exploding. I mean, you've had some big explosive plays, but there's times where you're getting 1, 2, 3 yards a carry, and you're just like, okay, well, where's the hole on that play? So I'm interested to see how Clemson handles them. I know Virginia Tech had some success, not Virginia Tech, but Virginia rather, had some success against them this past week, and it was a decent game. I know you're going to make your picks on Saturday, but I guess long term, what do you think of this Miami team, regardless of what happens against Clemson? Do you think this is a team that can get to 9-10 wins?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What encourages you about that?
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off but I think the most important thing, regardless of what happens on Saturday night, is for Miami to not let this game ruin the rest of its season. Remember, like in that time when Miami was trying to get back, it looked like they might finally beat Florida State. They would blow the game against the Noles, and then the rest of their season they would be done. I think there was a stretch where for a couple of years where they didn't win another game after they lost to Florida State. Like if they were to lose this game, like just route and say, hey, we take care of business. Here's our example. We left X, Y, and Z on the field, or hey, we need to do X, Y, and Z better. We went to the best team in the country, the best program in the ACC right now, and here's how we did. Maybe they'll lose by 10. Maybe they'll lose by 7. Maybe they get blown out. But whatever it is, Manny Diaz and Baker and Lashley can just sell their team on getting another opportunity against this team in the ACC championship game if they take care of business. I mean, you look at the rest of the schedule, and they should be favored in every single one of their games with maybe the exception of that Virginia Tech game. But they'll be favored home against Pitt. They'll be favored against Virginia. They'll be favored at NC State. They'll be favored against Georgia Tech. They'll be favored at Wake. And then that North Carolina game could ultimately be a game that determines who will go on to the ACC title game. So just not letting the result Saturday one way or another, or if you do somehow pull the massive upset, don't automatically think that that's your meal ticket. You're a national title contender now. You're locked into the ACC championship game, because there is a lot of football left, and we've seen this Miami program the last few years really struggle in situations where they were a big favorite. Now they did get past that against UAB, and they did get past that against Florida State. So maybe the fact that they have an offense now will overcome some of those past struggles, but just don't let what happens on Saturday night ruin, I guess I should say, the rest of the season.
Yeah. I have Kelvin Harris, who comes on the show with me. He's a former Hurricane who won three national titles.
And he was there when I was there.
Yeah. He always tells me, he calls it the Uncle Larry syndrome, because, you know, everybody has that uncle who goes to the bar and gets drunk off of a big win and then can't find his way back home, right? He wants to make sure that the Canes don't end up the same way with that Uncle Larry syndrome. And I think that's exactly what you described. Speaking of which, you mentioned being there at the same time as Kelvin. When were you at Miami as a student, and what's kind of did you go to games as a fan? Were you at the Orange Bowl all the time? I'm curious, is from that perspective.
Yeah. I was usually working in the press box as part of the SID staff, or I was keeping official stats, or I was keeping visiting radio or television stats for one of the broadcast teams coming in. I think in my time at Miami, I was in the stands as a fan for, oh gosh, I want to say three games. I would say the 1990 Florida State game, which was my freshman year, just because at the time I didn't know, I had no idea I was going to be like working the press box like the day of the game. Right. So one of my lifelong childhood friends, he grew up a huge Hurricanes fan, and he had moved to Orlando. So he came down for that game, and I had gotten tickets, and I kind of felt bad that I wasn't able to work, but I'm like, yeah, I promised Jason we would go to the game. So I did that. And then the 1990 Notre Dame game up in South Bend, where Rocket Ismail ruined that afternoon. And then the 91 wide right. I think after that, I don't think I went to another Miami game in a non-work or WVUM type capacity.
Well, I got to ask, because you said it said again on Wikipedia, so I can ask you whether or not this is true, but it said you grew up a Penn State fan. I can believe it from where you're from, right? I mean, that was a rivalry.
Penn State was like my first real like awareness of big time college football. I have a lot of family in Eastern Pennsylvania, and they were all Penn State fans. So like that was my like basically indoctrination to like big time college football. So I mean, I would always pay attention to Penn State and how they were doing. I'd always watch them. I'd root for them. So, growing up in Long Island, it was either basically Penn State or you're watching the Notre Dame replay on Sunday. And Syracuse really wasn't a factor when I was growing up. BC, of course, honestly, no one really cared about BC football. And I mean, they had Flutie and he won the Heisman. He was great. But it wasn't like a huge deal. So like Penn State was like the biggest deal in terms of college football and being a football junkie and knowing that I had people who lived and breathed and in every single moment of a big Penn State game. I was like, you know what? This is kind of cool. So let me go along for the ride with them.
Yeah. Well, 87 was obviously the Fiesta Bowl when Miami lost to Penn State. I'm sure you must have been rooting for Penn State then, right?
At that time, I actually was, just because I really was. I wasn't fully – January 87 would have been my right in the middle of my freshman year of high school. So I was still kind of like rooting for Penn State at the time. But it wasn't I hated Miami type of deal. I love those Miami – and I loved watching – that Miami team in 86 and beating up Oklahoma and just the dominance that they had. So I mean, I was happy Penn State won, but at the same time, it wasn't like this. I had like this anti-Miami deal. It wasn't like the Penn State versus Miami. Penn State's the good guys and Miami's the bad guys. It wasn't that at all. It was more like, okay, my family's happy, so I'll be happy for that.
Of course, though, you know, once you are a Miami guy, you are the bad guy for everybody, because everybody else in college football loves to see Miami lose, don't they? I mean, that's just kind of the thing, especially when they're dancing and celebrating and hot dogging it. Everybody's kind of always disliked that aspect. I'm wondering how your family felt when you told them you were going to Miami. How did they react?
They did. I was getting far away from them. What are you kidding me? They loved every second of it. No, they were happy for me to just be able to go on and go to a school that I wanted to go to and kind of work out a path to kind of pursue my career and happiness. I mean, they were happy for me to just to be like, wow, he's really doing this. So it was just kind of cool to just kind of. I don't want to get like too like sentimental or like life lessons here, but to be 2,000 miles away from home or whatever it is from Miami to Long Island and be 17, 18 years old at the time and just kind of just be involved and meeting new friends and being away from home that far much for the first time. It was a great experience and I would do it all over again. I wouldn't change a thing with where I went to school and how I got the path to where I am now. It was awesome. So it was an unbelievable 4 years of my life.
Great. Now Miami fans are certainly happy to call you one of their own. Who gave you the nickname the Bear, by the way? Who decided that was
Lee Corso. And okay. It was actually I'll give you. Is this a G-rated podcast, or am I allowed to say?
We're allowed to say whatever we want on here. Perfect. We are the HBO of sports.
Perfect. That's what I wanted before. I always give people that preference before I go into it. But it was actually we were at the Fiesta Bowl 1 year, and Kirk and I were having brunch in like a hotel restaurant lobby. And anyone who's seen Kirk and I out at dinner or lunch or whatever have a tendency to know that there's always like any empty space on the table is a bad thing. Like there needs to be food covering the entire table. So we're kind of sitting there on gym shorts and t-shirt and Coach always liked to go for a walk in the morning just to kind of get his exercise in. So he comes into the lobby and he would always have like a black leather jacket and like blue jeans and his white tennis shoes on and he spots us. And there's like no like trying to sneak on over and hide and maybe not be seen or heard or noticed. So he immediately yells, "Yo, Kirk Herbstreit, Chris Felica," because he sees us over there. And like, then of course all the heads are turning and he's like, makes no bones about it. So he comes on over to the table and he looks at me and he looks at the table and he looks at Kirk and then he looks at me again and he goes, "Look at you, Felica." You're just like a big bear. All you do is eat, sleep, and shit. So ever since then, I've been the bear.
Wow. You know, it's funny. And my brother, I'm very much the same. I feel like you might be my brother from another mother, because I really, those three things are my favorite things to do as well.
Let's share my 23.com DNA ancestry card. Let's see how many relatives we have here.
Well, my brother calls me the bear as well. That's what he calls me for the same exact reasons that you laid out there with Lee Corso. He calls me the bear. And because he's always making fun of my back hair. He's always like, you can see it coming through the shirt. So he says I'm a grizzly bear, you know, for that reason. So,
That's great.
Oh, man. Speaking of coach, I know you probably got to go here soon, and I appreciate all the time you've given us. It's been really a fun ride for me. How's coach doing? He's a Miami Jackson high school grad, right? And you know, I know he's getting older, and we see him on TV, and we're like, I love having him on there. How's he doing? How excited is he about this football season? Is he still the same guy? Is he still, I know you don't see him in person per se, but how fun is it to work with him?
It's great. I mean, he is just a gem of a person. Just a good-hearted man, and it's been very disappointing not to be able to have him on the road this year, to have that spontaneous interaction and the relationship that he has with Kirk, and just have Kirk be able to kind of like put his arm around him and get him through a comment if he's struggling, not being able to. And that's the biggest thing with Lee's health. His health is fine. It's just that as after the stroke, it's like sometimes his mouth can't catch up with his mind, and they can't get on the same page, and that's why he's had a tendency to stutter at times, which it frustrates him because he knows what he wants to say. He just can't always get it out exactly how he wants to say it. But he is fine. He is healthy at home. He has no issues. It's great to have him a part of the show in Orlando from his home, in the way that we have, and keep his headgear and his pick segment alive. And because he's someone who he's going to be involved in college game day as long as he wants to be involved in college game day, because we've always said that he is the one part of the show that is irreplaceable. You can replace me. You can replace Kirk Herbstreit with another analyst. You can replace Reese Davis with another host. You can replace Desmond Howard with another player. But Lee Corso is his calling was entertainment. And he mixes entertainment with some college football sensibilities as well. So he's doing great, and I'm looking forward to the time when again he'll be sitting on that set, and we can have a lot of fun with him in person.
Yeah, he is a treasure. It's always fun, and you know, I think most fans there's a sense of college football is back when you see coach, right? Is that not the sense when you see him? It's like, and especially through this pandemic, everybody's been, you know, looking for something positive. To have the show back, I feel like it really puts people in a good mood.
And Lee Fitting, who produced College Game Day for a long time and now heads up our college football coverage at ESPN for the management position, he has said for many years now that you can make a very good argument that no one in recent college football history has done as much for the popularity from an entertainment standpoint than Coach Corso has. So I definitely think there is something to that.
Yeah. Hey, so I want you to get a chance here to promote your podcast. And obviously everybody knows you're on College Game Days on Saturdays from 9 to noon. But the podcast, where can they find it? I know you and Stanford Steve are working together.
Yeah, you can find it pretty much anywhere where you get your podcasts. Stanford Steve and the Bear, we record every Wednesday early afternoon. So usually by a late afternoon on Wednesday, the podcast is up. And then on Thursdays, our weekly picks column gets posted to ESPN.com, so you can find us there. Daily Wager is on ESPN2 every night at 6 o'clock. My days on the show right now are Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. That may change in the near future, depending on what goes on in the sports world, but definitely tune into the show for all those days. So that's pretty much where you can find me. And then, of course, like I say, College Game Day on Saturday morning from 9 to 12 every week. So I'm Some people might too much FaceTime might be a bad one. I don't want to flood the market too much with me, but it certainly is good to have so many different outlets out there to be able to get some opinions and thoughts and conversation out there.
Yeah. Well, listen, I've really enjoyed this, Chris. It's been so much fun to talk to you and the preview this Miami Clemson game and just talk about all the things going on at ESPN with coach and everything else. It's been a pleasure on my side. So hopefully one day we can get you back on Wide Right. We love having Canes, former Canes, whether they're players or guys who were like me covering the game and working stats and doing all that kind of stuff. So I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Let's make a date that if we somehow Miami winds up making the ACC championship game, let's reconvene that week.
Awesome. That sounds great to us. Thank you so much.
305-954-568. This is the state of Miami. Y'all know y'all come down that way.